Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PBD Cast, the only podcast that's live and indirectly from Providence, Rhode Island, via Columbus, Ohio. I am your humble host, John Orlando. Welcome to episode number 110. I'm glad that you're joining me here on this episode. I think it's going to be a good one. It's a gentleman that appeared a mere 30 episodes ago. Wow, and when you say it out loud, it seems like... seems so impressive, and I mean, maybe it is impressive that I have 110 episodes, but nonetheless, Mr. Jack Wallace is going to come on and talk to me, and to talk to you, about Disposable Fiction Comics. Now, a lot has changed since the last time that Jack was on talking about Disposable Fiction Comics. In fact, episode 80, back in October of 2015, is the first time Jack and I sat down to talk about his many projects. At that time, Chris Allen and Jack Wallace were the two men behind Disposable Fiction Comics, and they've expanded a little bit, and we're going to talk quite a bit about that in our conversation, about how things have gotten bigger and better, and all of the great things going on over there at Disposable Fiction Comics, or DF Comics for short, if you want to call it that. So, with that, I'm not going to waste any time. I'm going to get right on into it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of this break, you're going to hear my conversation with Mr. Jack Wallace.
Trivia Geeks, the Unpredictable Game Show podcast, is back with a brand new season. They've got a new host, new games, and a new day and time. But that's not all. Now you can download their companion app, TrivNow, and play along in real time. Watch Carrie on YouTube as she tries to convince her partner that his Dark Knight hasn't risen in years. Listen on Diamond Club and Alpha Geek Radio, Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern. You can also follow the show on Facebook and Twitter and get all the latest updates and showtimes.
All right, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. John sitting down here with Jack Wallace from Disposable Fiction Comics. Jack, how you doing?
Good, John. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Well, you're back here for the second time.
Yeah.
Episode 80, back in October of 2015, was the first time you and I sat down to talk comics. And so, what's new
with Disposable Fiction Comics? I was just thinking, man, you've had like 20 episodes since then.
I have. This is episode 110.
Yeah. So 30. All right. Well, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I actually wanted to ask you, because I saw, how is the, how's the ice rink coming?
The ice rink?
Because it's got to be warm, right?
Yeah, the ice rink is a disaster.
Is it really? Is it just done?
It popped another hole in the liner, and therefore I lost quite a bit of water.
Oh,
so
no.
I have to fix that and then refill it again.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have asked about it, but I was so curious because I heard about it. Heard you talking about it. I'm like,
it's been the bane of my existence.
Yeah.
Between Mother Nature not helping,
right?
And the two holes that I've had to patch.
And not being cold enough to actually form any ice.
No, right now it's like a waiting pool. Or as I like to call it, a Zika breeding ground.
Yeah, right. Yeah, oh, that's a fun time. That'll be great when it warms up.
Anyways, so let's backtrack a little bit and just tell the folks that are listening who maybe didn't listen to episode 80, and if you haven't, go ahead, just go back to the archives and listen to it. But nonetheless, what is Disposable Fiction Comics?
Disposable Fiction Comics is it's a web comic. We do one story a month. Each story is about 5 to 6 pages. And it varies genre. We do a lot of horror to crime to mystery to... we have a doomed romance book, which we just are just finishing up. There's a games and competition book, and there's which has all been pretty fun. I mean, I get to change a lot of different genres and work with a lot of different characters, and so they're all kind of one shots. Each story has a beginning, middle, and end, so you're kind of not keeping up with issue 5 of 6 to go and find out. So. That's kind of what we do, one story a month.
So the games and competition comic.
Yeah.
I'm curious, what does that entail?
It's a good question, because I think that's the one that people are always like, I don't understand that genre. Because it's not really a genre, but we had four stories that we needed to put in, and okay. That was the theme that put it in there. Okay. So, the stories in there, there's Lady Luck, and it's about a homeless woman that wins the lottery, and she has to, she ends up buying a hotel and a casino, and then kind of competes against other people, and so she gambles her winnings to...
Okay.
There's a Battle of the Bands... there's a Western shooting competition,
okay.
And a virtual reality video game.
Okay, story. See, I was thinking along the lines of something a little more interactive, and I'm like, wait a minute. So the readers aren't competing? I see where you're going, though. Okay.
No, but that's a great idea. That
if, you know, that just requires more website work.
Yeah. the bane of my existence, right?
So, I've noticed that one thing that has changed with disposable fiction comics from the last time we talked is it seems you have quite a talent pool. Quite a bit of folks who are helping out or who are being creative with disposable fiction comics. Like, how did you get all these folks? And I mean, there's a lot of them. I have the list of names here, just a few. But how did you collect this roster? How did you get folks to start chiming in and giving their ideas and their content and whatnot?
Well, I mean, so we start, you know, I think at this point we've worked with about 40 different artists, and I will say maybe probably 5 or 6 letters. And so we've worked with a lot of different people. The first time that we did it, we just put out an ad, and you know, we were able to make a few comics, and then okay. People were able to go to the site and check it out. Mm-hmm. That's when it was all still on the blog, and it's kind of grown since then to the point to now where we put material out, or we put an ad out for artists. Basically, I'm the writer. Chris does the coloring and the lettering, and then we have a new artist come in for each project that we do.
Chris Allen, your partner.
Chris Allen, yeah.
Yes, okay. I was just going to mention that. As you kept using we as a plural.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's okay.
Chris Allen is not a slight against you in any way. But yeah, so Chris Allen is my partner. He's in Scotland, and he's been my partner for, I would say, a little more than a year. And he does mainly all the coloring and lettering for all the projects, and then we bring in a new artist for each story. I feel like now, because we've had the site going on for a little mm-hmm. while, people have now, if the artist, it seems like they're a little bit more interested, because okay. there is a little bit more to look through
and
and a little bit of a following, and so that's, you know, that helps.
Is there some of the just the old-fashioned way? You're at a con, you see somebody, you start talking, you're like, "Hey, come on and do something with DF Comics."
I have done that before. I've actually done that exact same thing. Peter Zeisler he did a book with me called it was our fantasy book that we did, Spellbound.
Okay.
And I had met him in that exact same scenario. I was down at Rathacon in Athens.
Okay.
And had met him, and he was actually just kind of there, kind of hanging out, and he had some artwork to show off. And so I've done that before, but mainly, to be honest, it's almost exclusively just going to digital webbing.
Okay.
I don't know if you've known. So there's a couple ad sites that you can put out ads for artists in. One of them is digital webbing and Pencil Jack. And then there's another one, but it doesn't seem to be well trafficked. So,
if I may ask, of all the different creators you've worked with, who probably impressed you the most, if I can kind of put you on the spot?
Oof.
It's, and by no means is that a slight to anyone that's not mentioned, but, you know, I imagine in your, you know, sitting as the man behind DF Comics, that there had to have been one person that you thought, wow, this is really awesome stuff.
We've worked with so many. It's funny because it's like, it is, you know, I know that cliche of it's like we're, you know, finding out who your favorite kid is. But, you know, I mean, it's one of those things that we've worked with so many different people, and each one has a different style. So,
okay.
You know, what it's really more part to which style you're more partial to. And we've had people that Gabe Alsley was one of the people that we've worked with, who is pretty amazing. He did our story Convention of the Gods, and his story is just bonkers. His art style is very slapstickish, kind of cartoonish, but really well done, and it really fits the world. But, you know, that's one of the nice things about when you change artists is that everybody's got their own thing, and so you never really... Each story kind of has its own feel to it, just judging from who's doing the pencils by it. And it changes dramatically depending on who you give it to.
So could you walk us through, the listeners, can you walk us through how you decide on a particular project? Like the creative planning, if you will, the brainstorming, whatever you want to call it.
Well, last year, so for, we just are wrapping up our second disposable fiction book, the second anthology. We're just nose hairs away from finishing it.
Okay.
And so the project started with, well, we were gonna shoot this project off, and hilariously, I had a probably three scripts maybe done that. Okay. I was like, you know, I've got a little bit of money saved up, and I've got about three scripts, so let's put an ad out there and see who we get. And what happened is, we got a lot of really good people, like a lot of really good people on board that were like, yeah, this sounds great. And then I'm like, I don't want to turn anybody down. And I really need to, you know, I know we're going to start this book anyway. And what happened was then I was kind of, okay, well, now I have to crank out a lot of material very quickly.
Okay.
And I did. And, you know, just pumped out the scripts as quickly as I could.
And then did each artist go, I would like to look at that one, or I'd like to look at this one, and they...
We place people.
Or you place people in those. Okay.
Not always, but, I mean, you know, sometimes... It depends on how many scripts you have available left. Okay. So if we have, you know, if we've got three available, they're welcome to check those out.
Okay.
But a lot of times you'll see somebody... like Gabe was a perfect example where it was... He had a specific style that was a little bit outlandish.
Mm-hmm.
And so his, you know, conventionally the God story is about... God presents the world to a list of against. He has to compete. He has to enter the earth into a competition against other gods.
Okay.
Other world creators, right? So,
okay. Like Zeus and like the Roman gods. Just
anybody. Okay. Just people. You know, gods that we don't know exist.
Okay. All right.
And some of them are, you know. There, I think there's a lady with an octopus, you know, who has an octopus body and stuff. And so everybody has their own planet that they've designed. And so his story, his artwork was perfect for that stuff.
Okay. All right.
Where we had another artist named Francisco who did more real world stuff, more real life. And so we put him on a horror comic, and it worked out. I mean, it, you know, you kind of adjust the story to people's styles.
Okay.
And see
yeah.
how they work.
Okay.
And, you know, sometimes you give them the opportunity, sometimes it depends on where in the process you are. Sometimes you have all the scripts, sometimes you have two left. I mean, it just depends.
Okay, all right. So, all right, that kind of walks us through where you came up with those ideas to put those where people where and whatnot. So, a lot of these folks are from all around the world.
Yeah.
Do you find that to be challenging? Because I know there is, again, I'm just going to paraphrase because a gentleman in Canada, I believe it was a gentleman in Argentina.
Yeah.
I think they're from literally all around the world. So is that a challenge?
It can be, yeah. The language barrier can be a bit of a trap.
Okay.
Not typically, being that I know no other language, you know, so that it really puts all the onus on them to kind of figure it out. So... but I've also been really surprised in how well other people can kind of get through the language barrier. You also get, you know, the beautiful thing about these days is that if, especially with working with somebody on the internet, is that if they're not kind of getting the vision that I'm looking for, or they don't understand, you know, why is this panel here? Or what's this supposed to be a picture of, I can kind of either, one, take a picture myself and send it to them,
mm-hmm.
or two, I can send them a Google image of mm-hmm. something that would be similar. And that, you know, so that helps tremendously.
Yeah, the technology, I think, is the thing that many creators talk about that, you know, 10, 20 years ago was just, it made things so much more difficult to work with somebody miles and miles, if not, you know, thousands of miles away. So I think that definitely is, you know, thanks to technology... Probably not a non-issue. Or a small issue.
Yeah, a small issue. But it makes it less of an issue, certainly. Yeah. But, I mean, you know, even from the world that you and I work in, where we're building a web page and we're putting stuff out there, material, a consumption of digital goods, and trying to build a business off of it. I mean, none of that was even doable 20 years ago.
You're right. You know, absolutely.
So everything has changed.
Absolutely. You got it. There would be, as I try to explain to elderly relatives what a podcast is, it's like a radio show.
Right.
But there's no actual radio station. You know? And so I totally get with that.
But I feel, sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say the only other thing about that is just that, and as you know, where that's really great, it also kind of has its drawbacks because now everybody has that same access. And so in order to cut through the buzz or kind of cut through all the other stuff and get your voice heard or get people to go to your website or listen to your podcast or check out your webcomic, whatever it is, becomes difficult because it is...
The competition.
Yeah, it's competition is just everywhere.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I think that's the thing that definitely, especially being DIY, as you are, as I am, I think that's the biggest challenge. Is the biggest challenge, you know, because when I started, I thought, I have a website, I have a Twitter, that's all I'm going to need. The world is just going to come to my door, and that's not it. Because, you know, I think I read somewhere there's 250,000 podcasts in the world. So you're looking at an ungodly amount of talent and ungodly amount of content. The same goes for web comics.
Sure, absolutely.
I think that is definitely a challenge. I mean, it's easy to do, but now, you know, you gotta rise above everybody else and compete for that attention. And yeah, most definitely.
Well, and to that, I suppose that makes when we're doing this, you know, it makes it great for us to be able to partner together. And you know, you've done a great job of being showcasing the Columbus comic scene.
Thank you.
And that's been great. I mean, everybody that I know, you know, I know pretty much a lot of the people that you've had on your list. And it's cool to have somebody keep continuing to showcase us.
Well, again, like I said, we're in the same boat. You know, just because, you know, we have different media outlets, you know. And I've always, as we've talked, and I know you've mentioned too, I was a comic book geek as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, some of my favorite comics were incredibly... I was incredibly passionate about them, you know? So, I mean, so to be able to kind of, and again, learn about another genre, if you will, or another world of comics, the indie comics, which, again, as a kid growing up, I was Marvel, DC, you know?
Sure, yeah.
Whatever else was out there. You know, I had a few Whitmans and a few, you know, other ones. Yeah, so I mean, for me too, it's been a great experience as well. So.
Yeah, you're kind of getting into the otherworldly stuff.
Yeah, most definitely. But all right, let's get back on track and talk about a big project that you guys have been working on, the Marriage Act.
Oh yeah.
Now this is not designed because I know originally, back on your first appearance on the PBDcast, you mentioned that, you know, you didn't mind if people read your comic, you know, read three or four pages and threw it in the trash because it was supposed to be that while you're waiting for the bus. Is this disposable? The Marriage Act.
What we've done and what we've tried to do is make it so that we have a list of material that you can read for free. But the Marriage Act was one of the few that we kind of kept because it is a full issue.
Mm-hmm.
And the Marriage Act has been it's been a very popular one, and I think especially we had posted it for free for a little while right after the I should explain the Marriage Act is about a law that gets passed in Congress that says that everybody has to be married to someone of the opposite sex by the age of 30. So it's about a gay man and a bachelorette that move in together to kind of circumvent the law and kind of hide from the government. And so from that, when the Marriage Act, or when Congress did pass the Marriage Equality Act, or the Supreme Court had, we had kind of toasted that and put it up for free for a little while. And people, it's a little bit controversial, but people seem to be into it.
Did you get hate mail on it, so to speak? I'm just using...
No.
Or negative reaction, I should say. Most of, all of it was positive?
No. We are kind of in the area where we don't get a lot of feedback, period. But it wasn't good or bad. I mean, I think the people that had read it, you know, had seen it pretty favorably, but, you know, we haven't really seen too much in the way of we don't really get that much way in the feedback of, you know, hey, you suck. And I, you know, and if you want to tweet that to me, I'm good with that. I think any conversation is a good conversation. Okay. So I'm good with that.
So what was the inspiration for the tale?
I had that idea back. The inspiration was that it was Rick Santorum's wet dream of a world. And it was that idea that, you know, if he was to have, like, his perfect way, like, that was going to be the idea.
Yes. Because he was quite outspoken
against gay marriage. Right, against gay marriage. Yes, and, certainly. And how this would be, you know, the family values way of making everybody a wholesome, you know, unit. Although, in this way, you know, there's also a lingering part of it is that, you know, there some of the backstory to the marriage act is that there was a war that had wiped out a large part of the population, and so the marriage act was actually instilled to, you know, increase population, and, you know, but this was one of the terrible side effects that had come up with it. So
I always laugh with politicians like Mr. Santorum, who always wave that banner of family values,
right,
when a divorce rate among American citizens is like 50%, maybe right, even higher by now. I'm like, yes, because that's exactly the family values.
Yeah.
When you have people who want to get married but can't.
I mean, or Newt Gingrich, who'd been married 4 or 5 times, and
right,
you know,
yeah,
had the
you
same
know,
kind
yeah,
of...
most definitely. I mean, I think that is quite hypocritical.
There, and there was an element to it, and Larry Craig, I think he was one of the politicians,
yes,
a Republican politician who had gotten arrested for
solicitation.
Yeah. And that was really the other core part of the story, was like, just this idea of living, of promoting this sort of lifestyle, but in your own world, you know, you're kind of, you have the complete opposite thing going on.
Exactly,
and you've just sold out everybody who's like you.
Yes, exactly. You know what? This is such an off the wall question. So if it stumps you, I apologize. I think that when I was, again, doing some research, and I remember we talked about the Marriage Act on when you stopped by the first time, but there's a film that just came out recently called The Lobster.
Oh,
are you
familiar
with
that? I
did.
Yeah, I did.
There was
that.
Just such a strong connection that I'm like, man, this is kind of very similar to it, because the plot of that movie is you have to be married by a certain age, and if you're not, then you become some type of creature.
Right.
And I never got the chance to see it, but it's gotten rave reviews. A lot of people have liked it. So
yeah, I did.
That's the first thing that I thought of this weekend when I was researching things and jotting down notes. So
that movie still surprises me that it was able to be such a popular film with such an outlandish idea.
That is.
I don't know another movie. In fact, I had actually, I was explaining the movie to one of my friends, and he's like, "You're just making this up." I'm like, "No, this is exactly what happened."
Is this some B movie you saw on Cinemax? No, it was not.
It was a real thing. Yeah. Josh Riley's in it. You know, it's a real
movie. Yeah. And Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell's in the movie, most definitely.
All right, let's talk about a few other recent projects. And funny that you mentioned it. You mentioned the competition comics, Long Shot.
Yeah,
it was a Western shooting competition.
Yeah,
are you a fan of Westerns?
I grew into Westerns.
Okay.
I don't think I started out kind of really into Westerns, but I've kind of grown into them. And in fact, I've kind of grown into even the Western literature, like Zane Grey and stuff.
Oh, yeah, and Louis L'Amour.
I like a lot of the movies. I feel like I didn't as a kid, but I think it takes a little time.
It does, and funny you mention that, the same with me. I don't think that as a kid or even in high school, I was like, Westerns,
Right.
You know, but I've come to appreciate them more so as I gotten older, because they are some really good films. There's some fascinating, awesome films that are Westerns.
Some of them are the best. I mean, you know, the whole spaghetti Western section, you know, those movies are amazing, and a lot of them are kind of rip-offs of the samurai movies that came out beforehand, they're still, you know, amazing pieces, and from directors that had not... for some of them, that was kind of their first roundabout was into the Western genre, but I've grown into it.
Okay, so was this the only Western comic you've done, or has Disposable Fiction done
others? This one was the only Western comic we had touched in, and again, you know, part of it you know, because we have a samurai story as well. And one thing I wanted to do was kind of play with the time period and not just make everything today, and kind of see what else I could work with and how well I could manage to do that.
What was some of the challenges of doing a Western then, from your aspect as the writer of it? What did you find that was challenging?
I would say, I feel like in the Western genres, you know, the big thing, you have some pinnacle things, and you have a lot of different players in that. You know, the hotshot with a gun or with a pistol. There's the Native Americans. There's the you have these kind of elements that play with each other, and so you kind of you have to work with different characters that you would not be really used to. Mm-hmm. I didn't know one of the biggest problems I had was I didn't know time locations. Like I set the story in Texas, but I wasn't sure when Texas had been created as a state.
Oh, okay.
And so
okay.
I had to kind of, you know, do a little bit more research.
Yeah.
And if not, you know, if characters had traveled, one of the characters is a former slave, and so he moves up, and so I had to kind of do a little, you know, small amount of research to figure out
if that actually could happen.
Yeah, right,
where
exactly.
That would happen at. Yeah, okay.
So those are things that I would not have thought about previously, but, you know.
Another recent one, a fantasy comic, Hell House, about Jenny's dead grandpa, leading her into misadventures. So
yeah.
You want to talk a little bit about that creative process for that comic?
Hell House was another comic that we had just done, and it was one of our horror comics. One of my one of my favorites out of the entire book that we'd done.
Okay.
Simply because Hell House had started out as being, I didn't know what I wanted to do with it. I had an idea for a story, and the idea was that I wanted somebody to figure out a mystery while of their dreams. So they would continue to have a couple dreams, and they would show them in real life, but they had to kind of figure out what was happening in their dream or what was the clues that were leading them to whatever it was. I could never really, the story never really took off in my head until I made it a horror. Once I changed it to having really a dark undertone kind of, it made the whole story a little bit really more sinister. So the idea is that Jenny comes back. And if you guys are interested, I'll spoil the ending because you can just go read it and that's fine. It's completely free. You're not going to ruin anything. So the story is Jenny is, she has a dream about her grandfather who's well passed, and he comes to her and says, you know, I need you to come to my house. And I need, what I'd originally had was an idea of, you know, that she wanted to find some treasure. And of course, once I changed it to a horror comic, that didn't work out as well. So, he says, you know, I need you to bring your boyfriend. I need you guys to come to my house. And Jenny has this idea, or at least, she decides I'm going to go with this. I'm going to try and find out what's happening. And it turns out that, I won't expressly ruin anything, but I will say that it turns out that Jenny's grandfather was not really a good guy.
Oh, okay.
And there's a lot of, and so it, you know, it kind of falls from that.
Okay, all right. How about Tricks of the Trade? Two hookers that help two dirty cops. This sounds like a 70s, like Bronson film is what this sounds like. But
that I was going for that. I was going for
really?
The 70s cop feel. You know, that's what I really wanted, was kind of like a dirty cops and prostitutes kind of story. And that's, you know, I feel like that was kind of my ode to those films, like the blaxploitation films. That where, you know, the cops are always evil. Just hands down, you know, from beginning to end. The hookers do not have a heart of gold, but they're in it to win it for themselves.
Right,
and I feel
exactly.
Like they were,
it's probably realistic.
Right?
I mean, I wouldn't know. I haven't had to have hookers help me do anything. I imagine that's more realistic of everybody's out for themselves.
The ladies are put in a tight spot, and they have to get out of it with and do as much as they can to avoid police that are trying to blackmail them into help or ratting on a drug dealer.
Yeah, well, and as we know, snitches get stitches in those
that's right.
In those times.
And these girls are not about going to the pen, I'll tell you that.
That's right. That's right. Now, you know what? So we've talked about a variety of colorful projects, but you had one that was maybe a little more family-friendly around Christmas time. Snowy the Snowman.
Yeah. Snowy the Snowman was our parody of...
Frosty the Snowman.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Yeah, so it was just a straight parody of that with basically Snowy wakes up and he has to figure out how to get to Antarctica because obviously Ohio winters, as we're experiencing now, are not really what they're made out of. So in order to survive, he has to go to the coldest place he can.
And I will say though, it was very light. It was very light and fun. Yeah. I mean, I don't know who the artist was on that particular project.
It was somebody we had just brought up. His name is Endar, but I cannot remember his last name.
Okay.
But he
did a very good job of making it very, very light and very colorful and very, very fun.
Yeah. It felt kind of, obviously the animation wasn't exactly like that, but it felt kind of, it had that reminiscent of kind of that kind of Christmassy cartoon.
Yeah. Maybe one that wasn't so Christmassy, as we'll talk here. The 512th day of Christmas.
Yeah.
This is a pretty dark...
It's anti-Christmas.
Spin. It's very edgy. Would you like to tell the listeners what the heck that was all about?
The 512th day of Christmas is our anti-Christmas story, I guess. it was for all the people who were kind of burnt out on Christmas, and that was kind of why I wrote it. Just because, you know, there's so many... I get burnt out of Christmas after a while, and so it was nice to kind of play with that. And so the idea is that Santa Claus has taken over the world, and it's been Christmas every day for a year and a half. It's up to a young girl on the naughty list and her friend to kind of save Christmas and stop Santa.
Okay.
So,
I will say this. I do like the idea that the naughty kids have to work in the factories to make the toys for the nice kids. That's some righteous justice right there.
If you're on the naughty list, you get sent to the North Pole. You have to work for Santa basically a sweatshop. And you have to make all toys for the nice kids.
This is equivalent of like one of those Scared Straight specials. You know where you take the actress kids to the prison? There, you take them to the North Pole. This is what you're going to be doing. You're going to be making toy trains.
Yeah.
14 hours a day.
Yeah. No, he's exactly right. You know, child labor laws don't exist in the North Pole.
No.
He can do whatever he wants to.
No, he's like Steven Seagal. He's above the law.
Yeah, exactly.
He's Santa Claus.
Well, honestly, part of it was to kind of... It was a swipe at the kind of commercialism that we take towards.
Yeah.
Because in the end, you have... In reality, you do kind of have kids making toys for other kids. You know what I mean? And in the end, it kind of changes the world. So the idea was simply that, you know, even if you got rid of Christmas and the material goods and all the... And Santa Claus and all that stuff, Christmas, for whoever it is more about just... Being, you know, enjoying life and that sort of...
And being with your friends and family.
Right,
and
exactly.
Stuff. Yeah, and the stuff that doesn't cost money.
Right.
Things that shouldn't cost money. Yeah, right. No, I get it.
So it was a little bit swipe at the system in that sense.
Okay.
Which we're good at. Yeah.
So, any other current projects that maybe I overlooked or ones that have just come out recently?
Those are the big ones. Those are the ones that we've just kind of finished up. We're finishing up those books. We have the Tales of Terror, which is our horror book. We have the casebook the criminal casebook, and we have the games or Verses of Verses, which is a games and chance book. All those are available in Comixology as well.
Okay.
So we put up those, and we're getting the last two done now, which is we have a book of doomed romance, and we have the our book of comedy, which is kind of wrapping up now too.
Oh, okay.
So.
Okay.
I will say it's really fun to, we've tried a lot of different genres, right?
Yes.
And so I feel like as a writer, that's been kind of one of the things I've really enjoyed is being able to try writing a horror book, to try writing a mystery, to try writing a comedy, and to figure out, one, what I'm kind of good at.
And what would you say your strengths are?
I would say I'm probably better at horror, and I am less good at comedy. I feel like the comedy I did worked pretty well. I felt like it was harder to write than I thought it would be. You know what I mean? Because, you know, usually the stories are just supposed to be a vehicle for jokes, you know?
Sure.
But I found that that was a lot more difficult. So shout out to all the guys who are out there doing comedy bits. It's not as easy as I thought.
Do you have some other big projects coming up besides those that you just said are wrapping up? Do you have some ideas about what's coming down the pike, so to speak, in a couple of months?
Well, right now we're working our biggest project that we're kind of working on is Frankenstein for Mayor, and that's been kind of one that's been in the works for a long time.
Yes,
we'd originally had we'd actually finished one issue and it was done. We decided to revamp it with another artist.
Okay,
and so we have finished the pencils and inks for one, but it's one of those projects that. I'm actually going to have to kickstart. So I've not ventured down that road.
It'll be my first. Okay.
Yeah.
Are you excited about that? Are you anxious about it? Are you nervous about it?
I think we've thought about it, and I feel like we've had enough of a plan, or at least a solid enough plan, that I think that we'll do okay.
Okay.
And
I've talked to some other creators, and they say sometimes it's daunting
to do Kickstarter.
It's a lot of work. It's very daunting. Others have come on this podcast and go, nah, it was all right.
Yeah.
It was a little bit of work, but you know, so I think, you know, it probably factors in comfort level, you know, with the technology and comfort level with promoting. You know, I think if you're not a comfortable person promoting your particular book, and you know, just like there's a million different people outside this library, you know, there's a million different people that are creators, and some of them, their strengths are promoting and others aren't, you know, so... I think it's mixed bad. So you feel pretty confident though that you guys will be all right.
I think that we'll do fine. I feel like Disposable Fiction has kind of been we've been able to build up enough of a fan base and a web presence that when we launch, we'll at least have somebody who's somewhat interested in an avenue to get to people. Figuring out how to do a Kickstarter is a daunting task because it is. I mean. We had originally, a little while ago, we were talking about doing about $7,000, which was going to be our total, right?
Okay.
So, for me, I'm like, and I've seen Kickstarters that do great, that exceed that. And then when I started running the numbers, I'm like, at 150 people of $40 a pop, which is not even close, you know, or 300 and something at $20 a pop, it's really, and then to complete the book, it's 140 pages, so people were going to have to... It wouldn't be done for about a year.
Yeah.
You know, and so one of the things we decided to do is just cut it in half. And so we'll do it in two different styles. We'll do 1 through 3 and then do another one later. So that has been really fascinating and difficult to kind of maneuver. And I've enjoyed it. I think we're to the point to where it's going to be. And the book is great. I mean, the book, we got the guy who had done, we have Ronaldo Le Contreras, who's done the 512th Day of Christmas. Mm-hmm. So his artwork is outstanding. And, you know, we have a killer team. Chris is also, an amazing artist as well. So I feel like the product is going to be amazing.
Yeah, sure. And you're in a good spot because this community of local artists can obviously help out as well. You know, giving you the advice. So I don't think you'll be flapping in the wind, so to speak.
Right. Well, and on top of that, the other project that we've just started working on, and I haven't really gotten too much further into it, was we were thinking about working on a an anthology of local Columbus people.
Oh, okay.
And just kind of figuring out, see if we can. Get money for printing to do a short run for a free comic book day. Drop them off at a couple shops. So we're investigating that and still getting things warmed up and seeing, you know, who's interested and who, you know. So that'll be fun. I feel like if we get that together, that'll be...
You'll be at Space this year, won't you?
I will be at Space, yes.
It's not too far from now.
I know.
The end of January, it's going to be whipping around here pretty soon.
Space is great.
It is.
And lots of love to Bob Corby for putting it on every year. And it cannot be an easy gig to do. But he does a great job every single year. And the amount of talent that is there every mm-hmm. single time. Mm-hmm. I mean, last year I met people who were from North Carolina over to Georgia to... I mean, it's amazing that...
Yeah, people from all over come in. Yeah. I think that Bob has said they've had people from California and the west coast of Canada come in. And, yeah. you know, I mean, yeah, most definitely. It's the place to be, you know, that weekend in the Midwest.
Yeah, it's great. You walk around. And, yeah, and especially for creators, because you get to walk around and you get to meet everybody who's kind of doing the same thing that you're doing.
Yeah.
And trade books and talk and see yeah. how it's going.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love space. I feel like it's probably one of the best things... And, you know, the Columbus Cartoon Crossroads has also kind of
oh, yeah.
taken over and done a really great job of putting Columbus on the map for yep. being a comic scene. Yeah, so Columbus is a place to be, I feel like. It's not, you know, I know Portland is another big city, but I feel like we're good. I feel like we're up in the rankings
yeah,
of comic
forget,
cities.
Forget Portland, Oregon, and Austin, Texas.
That's right.
They're so last year.
Columbus is a new breed, I feel
there
like.
There you go. As we're getting up here, almost time, we're sure. going to kind of wrap this up. I would like you to know that your website is blocked at my work. I know you would enjoy that factoid, so I'd throw that out there.
Hey, that, you know what?
That's so rock and roll.
I gotta say that the idea of being not safe for work is, you know, we've run on that, and I'm like, you know what? It's gonna have to be that. If you want to be able to curse and shoot somebody in the face, you're gonna have to go not safe for work. It's yeah, just what it's gonna happen.
That's
to
what
be.
It happens to be. But anyways, what website is that? Tell the people at home where you can check out the website.
DisposableFictionComics.com.
There you go. Simple.
Yeah. Just as it is. Or if you Google Disposable Fiction Comics or just Disposable Fiction, we're somewhere in there. So all right. Yeah.
Twitter and Facebook to plug.
DF Comic. Okay. Is a Twitter or at DF Comic, and if you search Disposable Fiction Comics and your Facebook, you'll find us.
Okay. Anything else like no Snapchat or Instagram?
No,
or
I'm bad enough at two platforms. I'm just gonna stick with those if I can
join the club, my friend. Join the club.
Right.
Okay. Here's my last question because speaking of Twitter. I saw, and I swore that I saw that you tweeted this out. Did you go see Run the Jewels?
I did, yes.
Did you?
Yeah.
How was that show?
And they retweeted me.
Did they?
Yeah, I know.
That's awesome. How was that show?
It was great. Those guys put on...
Well, as I mentioned on the last episode of this podcast, that was my fave. I stumbled across them, I think late October, maybe early November, with their newest song, Talk to Me.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, this is really good because to me it's reminiscent of that old, like, socially charged, politically motivated Public Enemy Boogie Down Productions.
Right, yeah.
That stuff that I grew up loving. And so I was like, wow, these guys, and I've just been listening to everything on YouTube. And I was like, man, I would love to go to that show. But one, it's sold out. Two, I'm like, I don't know if I want to spend like $1 million to go, you know, which. I know that was an exaggeration, Sean Spicer. Anywho. did you like that? That was topical.
Yeah, right in there. I liked it.
So they were really good, though?
Alternative facts. Yes, it was perfect. I mean, those guys came out, and I had listened to them through, you know, 2 and 3. My little brother had gave me their second CD, and it was... Like you said, just in your face, very, very upfront, and
yeah.
man, and their production is different than any other kind of rap does. You know,
yes.
it's got it's almost electro or electronic music type. But man, they just kill. I mean,
yeah.
You know, they were from beginning, and I saw you went to Fantagram too.
I did. Yeah. I went to Fantagram in October. And
yeah,
that was a phenomenal show.
Yeah,
I love Fantagram. I've seen them twice now.
Yeah,
and they're. They put on a great show.
Yeah, they were at the Express Live, is that
yeah,
right?
Okay. That is correct.
They recently did an album with Big Boy from Outkast called Big Graham. So
yes.
That's a pretty good one, too.
Yeah, they were phenomenal. I've seen them. They were here about 4 years ago with CD1025 Day, and they were great. And as soon as I heard that they were coming back, I went. But yeah, they put on a heck of a show.
Well, see, now I'm jealous. I saw that they were playing, and I'm like, I'm glad we can make each other jealous, John.
All right, well, Jack, anything else you want to mention real quick before we sign off here?
No, not really. I just want to say, you know, thanks again for being such a good star, for one, for having me on, and two, for being so good at the Columbus comedy
scene. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Sure.
All right. Well, with that, thank you for coming on, Jack.
Sure.
All right. I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of this break, I will be back to wrap up this episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, my conversation with Mr. Jack Wallace. It's always good to talk to Jack. I always enjoy seeing him at various different comic book shows and chatting with him. He's a great guy, and Disposable Fiction Comics have a lot of great things going on. So definitely support Chris Allen, support Jack Wallace. Go on over to DisposableFictionComics.com. I know it's a little bit of a mouthful to say. I know that. It might be a little bit much to type into a search engine. Well, guess what? You don't have to. Just go to pbdcast.com, go over to the links page, and you will see that I already have a link. Click on it, and bam, you're there. You're on the page. You're reading a great comic from the guys over there at Disposable Fiction Comics. So, you know, one thing that you heard Jack and I talk about is coming up March 25th and March 26th. That is, of course, Space, the Small Press and Alternative Comics Expo. It's coming really quickly. I mean, the end of March. It's going to be here like that before you know it. It's, of course, going to be It's going to be at the Northland Performing Arts Center in Columbus. And, you know, Bob Corby does a great job putting on this show. And if you love comic books, if you love really cool art, you need to jump on over there on March 25th and 26th. Check it out. Definitely go to backporchcomics.com because Bob has a whole section on Space right there from that website. And check it out. And come on out and support some great independent comic book creators. Many folks who have been on this podcast will be out there that day. So check it out. Circle it right now on your calendar, March 25th and 26th here in Columbus, Northland Performing Arts Center. You don't want to miss it. And with that, now let's go ahead here. And let's go on into, as you can hear the music firing up, that's right, let's go on into Orlando's Fave! That's right, you newcomers to this podcast, as the music kind of trails off there, it is the time of the podcast where I like to talk about something I think is cool, something I think is hip, something I think you should check out. It's usually one of my passions, and this time, I'm going to talk about one of my passions. That being movies. Over the weekend, I saw a movie that, I'm going to be honest with you. It came out a while ago. And, in fact, I'm not even sure. I think 2015 is when it came out. But, nonetheless, I, over the weekend, while hanging out with my cousin, decided to check out the Johnny Depp movie called Black Mass. And it was a really interesting film. Basically, it's a kind of a biopic of notorious Boston gangster James Whitey Bulger, but it was really well done. I really thought it was very good. The cast includes Benedict Cumberbatch, of course Johnny Depp, as I mentioned, Joel Edgerton, Kevin Bacon is in it, Adam Scott, Juliana Nicholson. So it's got a pretty big cast, but the tale was very interesting. It was kind of cool to... I'm always intrigued by some of those stories of people that outside of their general area, you think of them as being absolutely horrible, evil people, but, you know, there was a little bit of the other side to Whitey Bulger that I enjoyed. So, I definitely recommend checking out Black Mass. It is from 2015. I just kind of quickly looked it up on my phone while I was trying to think when it was. But yeah, 2015 release. Check it out. Most definitely, it's worth your while. All right, well, that being said, it's time for me to start wrapping up this episode. Let me tell you where you can get in touch with me. You can shoot me a tweet at PVDMVP. You can also shoot me an email if you like, johnorlando@pvdcast.com. If you want to, check on the Facebook page. Yeah, check on it. If you haven't checked it out yet, you need to do that. If you've checked it out before, you need to check on it and see what's new. Of course, that's facebook.com/pvdcast. And while you're over there, like it. And by the way, tell folks about it. Feel free to. I would appreciate it. Because the more people that are visiting that page, the more people that are visiting the Twitter page, the happier I'm going to be. Let's just put it that way.
Don't forget, you can get this podcast 5 different ways. You can obviously go to the online home of yours truly, pbdcast.com. You can check it out on iTunes. You can check it out on Google Play, Stitcher Radio, and SoundCloud. Pick whichever way is easiest for you. But whatever you do, however you get it, by all means, rate, subscribe, tell a friend, write a review. Do they have a thing for podcasts on Yelp? I don't even know. But if they do, give me some stars on Yelp, yo. I don't think they do. But nonetheless, yeah, just tell some friends. Get those statistics up some. I would greatly appreciate it. And with that, ladies and gents, I think it's time for me to go. So I thank you for listening, and I will chat at each and every one of you later.